Hey, welcome along. It is 4 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 5 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 5:30 p.m. in Newfoundland and Labrador, 8 p.m. in the British Isles, 9 p.m. Western Europe, 10 p.m. in the nearish Middle-ish East, Cairo, Khartoum, Jerusalem, that kind of territory, 11 p.m. Moscow, 11:30 p.m. in Tehran. For all you crazy Ayatollahs, dig in those half-hour time zones just like the Newfoundlanders do. Wherever you are on the planet, welcome to another of our Clubland Q&As. Anyone in the world can listen. You have to be a Mark Stein Club member to ask a question, but if you want to join up, we'll try and squeeze you in before the end of the show. We always like to hear from new members, so I'll do my best. Before I go any further, I should mention we're 3.5 days away from Election Day. Although pretty much, what is it now, 2/3 of the 2016 electorate has already voted. So you want to be careful, because if enough people vote to put it in the bag for Biden, you turn up, you leave it till Election Day, and you'll find some district court judge somewhere has ruled that if you turn up to vote on Election Day, that's too late, and you should have voted in the 2 months before Election Day. Just a point to bear in mind. Get out there and vote. The old line about voting early and often, the early bit has been dramatically extended this year. We'll be here all through till the big day. I'm going to be on a special Sunday edition of Tucker Carlson Tonight. That's Sunday. Great idea, that, a Sunday edition of Tucker. Maybe they'll make that a permanent thing. Monday morning, I'll be at Fox and Friends. And if you fancy a break from all this stuff, if it's all getting to you, then we've got a Halloween horror tale. I'll be back with that later tonight in a couple of hours. The Vampire by John William Polidori, Lord Byron's personal physician. And we'll be wrapping that up on All Hallows' Eve itself tomorrow, if you want to. I know it won't be as horrible as the chaos and lawsuits and looting that is about to happen around about 9 p.m. on election night, but we're doing our best. So if you want a break from the real-life horrors, then join me for The Vampire in a couple of hours. You know how this show works. It's all about your questions. I'm going to get to them in just a couple of minutes. I do just want to say that Bobby Orr from Parry Sound, Ontario, the great Bobby Orr, the first NHL player ever to get a $1 million contract, the best thing ever to come out of the Boston Bruins, for which he played. Bobby Orr, Officer of the Order of Canada, holder of Her Majesty the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal. Bobby Orr has taken a full-page ad in the remnants of my crappy state newspaper, the Manchester Union Leader, to endorse Donald J. Trump. He's never done anything like this before. He joins the great long list of sporting legends, Jack Nicklaus, probably the best American golfer ever, and Brett Favre, who is... for people like me, Brett Favre is mostly the guy from There's Something About Mary, in which he had a small but telling role. I'd like to say he was a brilliant... I never realised... what a brilliant actor he was, but I couldn't honestly say that. But he is in There's Something About Me. He's come out and endorsed Trump. Lots of people endorsing Trump. 2 minutes before I went on air, I got sent one of these, a little clip from the Times of London about the launch of Amazon's Swedish website. They've launched Amazon Sweden, just like they have Amazon US, Amazon Canada, Amazon Germany, Amazon UK, and so forth. And it hasn't gone well. they mixed up the Swedish flag with the flag of Argentina. They labelled frying pans as items for women. They listed something called an Adidas child sexual assault football shirt. They described a silicon baking mold as suitable for chocolate and feces. And it turns out they ran Amazon, the biggest company in the world, ran the instead of hiring a Swede, whom you could get for like $15 an hour, whatever that is in Swedish krona, they decided to run it through Google Translate. And Google Translate, the more specialized the language, the fewer people it's spoken by, the less and less reliable it is. So they translated certain things very old. Sometimes quite harmlessly, men's boxer shorts are now sold in Sweden as men's luggage trunks. A fabric belt got translated as a narcotics strap. And then certain things got rather more offensively translated. An embroidery pattern showing a rooster was translated as adult cross stitch, big dick, and a stopcock head was translated as a Finnish dickhead. And actually, if you've ever been in Malmo or Stockholm or Gothenburg, you'll know actually Sweden has quite a few Finnish dickheads. So you don't need to go and buy them on Amazon. But I, what was interesting to me about this is that this is actually the way the world is going to be once the woke billionaires of the big social cartel take it over. There's not going to be any real languages anymore. There's just going to be Google Translate. Every stopcock in Sweden is going to be a Finnish dickhead. That is just the way of the world now. They will eliminate languages, and we will all, in another 5-10 years of this Google, Facebook cartel, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Amazon cartel, we are all going to be Finnish dickheads, and we're all just going to be, whatever our original language is, we're all just going to be speaking Google Translate. Let's get on to your questions. As you know, we also added a little bit of a specialty for this pre-election edition, in that we put a little bit of an election prediction game in there, which I'll get to in a moment. Matthew Brazil says, or Brazil, maybe you're like the great English schoolgirl stories author, Angela Brazil, but whether it's Matthew Brazil or Matthew Brazil, Matthew writes, "Hello, Mark Stein, commenting for the first time after signing up today. Welcome along, Matthew. And do let me know whether I got your name correct, because I'm actually a big fan of Angela Brazil. You can't go wrong with old-time girl school stories to get you through the lockdown. One overarching theme from a lot of your shows has been about the importance of a common culture and the necessity of defending a heritage which has brought so much tangible good into the world. One thing I've observed over the past several years is that it's all but impossible to even identify a common culture when the citizenry can't even come to an agreement about what words mean, about what is good, or even whether the concept of objective truth has any value or merit. In times past, the sources of information were fewer, which allowed for greater commonalities to be found. However, these sources are now so numerous, not only is it impossible to listen to them all, but verifying the character and merit of these sources has become an exercise in futility. So-called fact-checkers can't be relied upon due to their own bias, and the word of those in lawful authority has been denigrated by their own misconduct. In a world where people can so easily isolate themselves from contradictory voices, where the very concept of truth has lost its currency among those who care only for holding the levers of institutional power to pursue their own agendas, regardless of how quickly the woke Stapo changes its standards, what are some practical methods of asserting the importance of truth to those who don't care for it, particularly with regards to the fundamental truths relating to human nature?" One of the interesting things to me that as I think about things, because I just happen to have been in a big legal deposition this week, and I happened to testify there, as I've testify all over the place that I always try to look for the original source document. So, for example, people say in the Michael Mann case that he lost against Tim Ball at the British Columbia Supreme Court on all the climate change hockey stick stuff. And I wrote about it, and people say, oh, well, Stein, what does he know about Canadian court judgments? But we always include the original document. So we've actually got the judge's ruling posted at Stein Online as a PDF from the British Columbia Supreme Court. And one of the most disturbing things in recent years, and it's accelerating literally with every day, you know this. If you try to look for anything to do, even with something like the Great Barrington Declaration on the futility of lockdown as a long-term strategy, and because the enforcers of information have taken against this document by three eminent epidemiologists from Harvard, Oxford, and Stanford. Three of the most eminent epidemiologists in the world. Google is 86th, the thing, so that when you go to look for it on Google, the first 40 links they suggest are actually opinion links explaining why the Great Barrington Declaration is a dud and you shouldn't go anywhere near it. This is the transformation of the internet over the last 20 years. When it started in the late 90s, the thing about these search engines was that they'd bring you first to the original document. So if you want to, it didn't matter what it was. If you wanted to look up my Broadway book, you'd Google Mark Stein Broadway Babies Say Goodnight, and the first thing would be a link to the book. Now, whatever you look up, as with Great Barrington Declaration or Hunter Biden or whatever, whatever you come up with first is like dozens and dozens of reasons why you shouldn't actually be searching for the Hunter Biden story, or you shouldn't be searching for the Great Barrington Declaration itself. So I think the first thing you can do, really, is, Matthew, is to actually suggest that people look for the original source, the original source. And it's not actually, you say there's now so many sources of information. There's not. There's basically two on the planet. There's Google and Facebook. So if you don't already have, like, Stein Online bookmarked, you're not going to actually find it through Google and Facebook, because I notice that it's getting further and further and further down the rankings when you try to do any search for me, for example. And that's actually the danger, not the proliferation of sources, but a kind of superficial ersatz proliferation that is, in fact, just two sources, Google and Facebook. And actually, the best thing you could do is just tell people, actually, get off Facebook. There's enough people on Facebook. The interesting people aren't on Facebook. Do it that way. Todd Lewis writes, the Chi-Com threat has always been portrayed here as possibly the greatest threat the world faces. This has not been the front burner issue of the campaign particularly, but Joe Biden's incredibly venal corruption with respect to China has kept the issue visible. I think Trump knows that the Chi-Coms don't hold as many cards as it may seem. Like all socialist regimes, they depend on other people's money as well as other people's technology to survive. The spigot on both of those can be turned off, but it requires realistic policy and courage. Trump has those things. Chi-Com hegemony requires thievery, blackmail, and fear to succeed. I'm sure Trump fully understands all of this. If Trump wins and lays down a legacy of bold, realistic policy with regard to the Chi-Coms, I don't think the 21st century will be the Chinese century at all. If Biden wins, it all will be an unmitigated disaster. The US could become to China what the Ukraine was to the Soviet Union. This election may be for the world, not just for the country. Is this an extreme and unrealistic view? No. If Biden wins, it's over, because he is China's man. One thing you understand, if you look at the Hunter Biden emails, which isn't really a Hunter Biden story. It's a Joe Biden story. Hunter's just the cutout for Joe. Zhou is China's man. The fact is, if you think about the few emails we've seen and what they reveal about Zhou, the big guy, my chairman, as Hunter calls him, and then you think about the companies they're in bed with, which are companies like all successful companies in China. They basically report to the Politburo. They report to Chairman Xi. So you think of the tiny little number of emails that have emerged in public here on Tucker's show and elsewhere. And then you think of what the Chaicoms have, what Chairman Xi's got on this guy. This guy has been colluding with China for years. This guy is married to a school teacher. We all call her Dr. Jill Biden for some reason, but in fact she's a school teacher. A school teacher and a public servant have somehow wound up with multiple multi-million dollar homes all over the map. I'm not saying Joe Biden is as corrupt as Saddam Hussein was. I'm not saying his Swiss bank accounts are the same size as Saddam's. But he's got all that money. A lot of it is from Kazakhstan, from Ukraine, from China. He's going to be their man. And then it is too late. Because the thing about this time, it can't be like the first term of Trump. I think Trump can win. I think Trump can actually win quite big. And a lot of listeners to this show do too, because as I said, we're having a little bit of a competition to predict it. And a lot of you are predicting Electoral College victories in the 300s, which no Republican candidate has done since George Bush Sr. in 1988. So you're looking at the biggest Republican victory in 32 years. And if that happens, we can't waste time anymore. We can't waste time on trivia. China will be the de facto global power in the event of a Biden victory. And it will, and I don't even get this, you know, we will be the Ukraine to China's Russia or whatever. I think it's a straight, I think it will be as China sees it, the biggest transfer of global power in half a millennium, going back to, because they regard the last half millennium as an aberration. The French regard the last two centuries of Anglo-American domination as an aberration. The Chinese take the long view and think that the entire period of Euro-American domination, the last half millennium, going back through Britain, France, Spain, Portugal, is coming to an end. And if it does... which it will do. If Biden wins, it's over on that, basically. Ray Winchester said, head scratcher, why is Tucker going to leave Hunter Biden alone from now on? Ray, I think, is referring to a remark Tucker made to say that they'd got all this stuff on Tucker. And not on Tucker. They have got stuff on Tucker, and they hope sooner or later to find the magic bullet that'll take him out. But they've got all this stuff on Hunter. And he said that some of it they've shown where it relates to Joe Biden. Because it's important to remember, this isn't a Hunter Biden story. Hunter Biden would just be an unimportant crackhead if it weren't for the fact that he's the son of Joe Biden. Joe Biden belongs to what they call the Biden crime family, and he's basically in the Marlon Brando role, and you got to kiss his ring and all the rest of it. It's a Joe Biden story, and the reason said Hunter said he was going to leave certain aspects of Hunter's life alone, which is basically crack addiction, hookers, knocking up strippers. And using them as his baby mama. And that's because, as he said, Hunter was his neighbor in Washington, D.C. for many years. Tucker, basically, until he was, you know, kind of forced out of a town he loved, Tucker was lived in Washington, D.C. for years, was one of the most sociable figures there. Tucker likes going to lunch at a restaurant and lunching a wide range of persons in the course of the week. and he knows all kinds of people. He knows everyone. So just when he's out walking his dog or whatever, he's running into Hunter Biden or whoever, and he's a very sociable fellow. He doesn't have that life anymore because even before the COVID closed all the restaurants, people would come up to him in restaurants and get in his face. But I think that's – I think he's making a point here, which is that even when people become a tabloid news cliche, if you knew them when they were still a real human being, that's how you think of them. And the example I was given there is my friend Don Black. Don has a great book out at the moment. This called The Sanest Guy in the Room, and I'll tell you where that title came from at some point. But Don is a great, successful songwriter, in the course of which he happened to write Michael Jackson's first solo number one hit, Ben, and in whatever that was, 1972. And one consequence of being around Michael Jackson back then is that he knew the real Michael Jackson. And Michael used to come over for tea when Don and his family were living in Hollywood. Michael used to come over for tea every Sunday or whatever day it was. And he and Don's late wife, Shirley, a lovely woman, Shirley and Michael Jackson used to paint together. They do all these paintings together. And so the thing for everybody else is that Michael Jackson is whatever you think of him. For most people on the planet, Michael Jackson is either a punchline or a pedo. He's a freak. He's either a funny freak or he's a creepy freak. And to Don Black, Michael is a rather shy boy who he knew as a boy. And before he became the punchline and the pedo and the freak and the crazy guy. And it's important. So it's important to remember that if you knew someone as a real person before they became a freak show, you always think of them a little differently, I think. David Hagen says, Mark, I know it's hard to believe, but I think that Mitt Romney hit the nail on the head when he talked about the dependent class. We in the West have too many people on the government teat, and they are never going to vote for smaller, responsible government and are becoming more and more radical. I think we need to do away with all public sector unions, starting with the teachers. You are right. You are right, David. Public sector unions are, in fact, a contradiction in terms, and I don't think they should exist. I agree with you on that. So you have the grifters of the public sector and their enablers, and the rest of us who pay for it all. I don't see a solution other than migrating the other way to Panama, Costa Rica, Mexico. While there might be some corruption, but they have no time for the woke. What say you? Yeah, I think that's one consequence of the COVID. It's seen a massive shift from mom and pop businesses to Amazon. Because if you're cooped up in your house, you can't go and support your mom and pop business, but you still need things. And Amazon is the only place to get them. It's become the company store for COVID land. And so we've seen that massive transfer on the business side. And on the job side, we've seen another massive transfer from non-essential jobs, which is the private sector, to essential jobs, which is the government sector. And so we've actually seen, we're actually building the societal model that the left has always wanted, where you have an elite, you have a clerical class and a dependent class. And they both operate in sync with each other because you need the larger your dependent class gets, the larger a bureaucracy you need to minister to them and to take care of them. And so we've actually seen an accelerate. That's a deformed society and a society that can't last long, of course. But we've actually seen a movement toward that kind of deformed society in what's happened in over the last 7 months of the COVID, and that would accelerate if we were to have a if we were to have a Joe Biden victory. Gabriel Garcia Moreno says, as France faces up to its big demographic destiny, if President Macron had a road to Damascus moment and genuinely resolved to save the liberté element of the national motto, what would be your advice on how to avoid the Sixth Republic being an Islamic theocracy? Is there time? Liberté, égalité, fraternité. And I think as one of our commenters modified it after the last couple of grim days, liberté, égalité, décapité. And that is the way it's going to go. Macron is talking tough. And I never really care for the talking tough now about anything, because I think the tough talkers understand that that there are those of us, particularly on the right, who are so grateful for anything that we fawn on the tough talk, and then are surprised that there's no action. And in the United States, particularly, there's never any action. You know, oh, there's going to be, you wait till this Durham report, the Durham report. We're just waiting for the Durham report. I couldn't believe it. I switched on the TV. I'm going a little bit far afield here, but I'll get back to your question, Gabriel. I couldn't believe I switched on the TV and people are genuinely excited because they've managed to confirm that the FBI are actually opening a criminal investigation into things arising from Hunter Biden's laptop. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay? So what that means is that in 3.5 years' time, when you turn on talk radio or you switch on the TV, you'll be watching the usual suckered host saying, oh, we're expecting the Hunter Biden report any day now. Democrats don't go to jail. Okay? If you haven't figured that out yet, and you're still pinning your faith on these investigators. I'll tell you something else, too. Ted Cruz, talking tough with that creepy, weirdy guy from Twitter, the Charlie Manson-type guy with the beard who looked as if he'd been sleeping in a dumpster for the last 2 years. That Twitter guy, Ted Cruz, says, who the hell died and made you the democracy commissar or whatever it was? Yeah, that's all very impressive, but why are we still talking, Ted? You know, either you're... Don't give me the checks and balances, the advice and consent. It's all rubbish and it isn't working. It's seized up. And all it means is there's Ted Cruz sitting in a room yelling at the creepy, freaky, weirdy Twitter guy, and the freaky, creepy, weirdy Twitter guy leaves the room, and the first thing he does is he cancels the Twitter account of the head of Customs and Border Protection for tweeting that walls work. They're ending. You've had your fun. You've had your fun with your multi-party politics now for a couple of hundred years, but we're putting an end to all that, because sometimes getting rid of this Russian disinformation is so important that what that boils down to is cancelling one of the two parties in a two-party system. He's acting and Ted Cruz is talking. And we shouldn't be electing legislators to talk. Now, Macron is doing a little bit more than that. France is a very centralised state. So, for example, I think that was it in Montpellier where they were beaming pictures of the Charlie Hebdo Mohammed cartoons onto the wall of a government building after the decapitation of the teacher. And this is one of the things that the crazy Allahu Akbar guys are mad about. And as I said, France is a very centralized state. And I don't believe that would have happened without Macron getting a heads up on it and deciding at least not to intervene and prevent it. The problem in France, as you say, is they're up against demographic reality. A lot of those cities are already lost. and their future is lost. And there's not a lot you can do about it, absent, for example, moves to repatriate significant proportions of the French Muslim population to their country of origin. And no, 40, 50 years ago, you still had anti-immigration types who talked about that. Nobody's talking like that now. And so at some point, you've got to get serious. You've got to say we're stopping all immigration into the country. We don't need any, and we're stopping it. We don't need any refugees. We don't need any chain migration. We don't need any of it. And whether that would be enough to save the Fifth Republic at this stage is hard to say. But unless you take even that modest step, unless you say we're going to be like America in the mid-20s and have a total immigration moratorium, you're not serious about even you have to signal you're willing to use those minimal powers to show that you're serious about actually reversing what's going on here. Because otherwise, this is a horrible thing. People being decapitated while praying. Decapitated while praying. And the first time it happened, I've talked about this before, when I went to the funeral at Rouen Cathedral of Père Hamel in France 4 years ago. And everyone was shocked. Decapitation in a Catholic church, in the mother church of France, for all the talk about laïcité and all the rest of it. Once you get used to that, there's not a lot you won't get used to. Todd Williamson says, there's no shortage of opinions about how the election is going to turn out. I think most of those opinions are based on somewhat overly tedious, somewhat clumsy data that is just not reliable. My approach is to look at what happened in 2016 and extrapolate. I can't imagine Trump losing a significant amount of his voters from last cycle. And indeed, I think he will pick up a few percentage points from conservatives who were previously not willing to take a chance on an unknown. On the other hand, I find it impossible to believe that Biden is going to bring out more voters than Hillary, who had the advantage of potentially becoming the first woman president and has the Clinton name and the vast Clinton political machine. So on balance, I think Trump will win by a bigger margin this time, hopefully more than the Dems' ability to cheat. Fingers crossed. Yeah, you know, basically, these last few weeks, one or other of these opposing forces are engaging in a massive head fake. You know, Trump going to Minnesota, where he's supposedly down by double digits. Why would he do that in the last 3.5 days of the campaign? Why would he go to a state which, according to the polls, he has no chance of winning? On the other hand, we look at this poll showing Biden up by 17 points in Wisconsin. Nobody on the Biden side believes that. That's like a massive head fake too. You know, if Biden thought he was up by 17 points in Wisconsin, if he thought he was up by double digits in Minnesota. He's in Minnesota today. They know that these polls are rubbish. And as I said, one or other of them, there's two sides to this, really. There's Trump and there's the media pollster crowd, because Biden's just in his basement and out of it. The fact that they've had to actually get him out of the basement, because I think the big plan was, the first plan was just to keep him in the basement and have Kamala doing more events. But nobody likes Kamala. She's a big bust on the stump, and so nobody wants to see her. And their second plan was just to keep Biden and Kamala in separate basements and just sit on the lead. And as Bobby Orr could tell you, when he's not taking out full-page ads in the Manchester Union Leader to endorse Trump, Bobby Orr could tell you, that's not really a good strategy. which is why at the last minute they've been forced into sending Biden into states he doesn't want to be in. He likes to go a short drive from Wilmington to Pennsylvania. So when they put him in Minnesota, it's because they need him in Minnesota, because they know that the stories about the double digit leads are fake and haven't worked. They also know that the early voting, Trump is supposed to have this massive advantage in election day, actual election day voting. And the point about the early voting was to enable the Biden crowd to override that, for which they'd need to have a kind of 70-30 advantage in the early voting to do that. And they don't have that in critical states like Florida. So they put the poor fella out to Minnesota, which is in the bag, according to the polls. Oh, look at these stupid Republicans scoffing at the polls. Whatever was wrong last time, we've figured it out, and the polls are much more accurate this time. So Biden's up 17 in Wisconsin, he's up 10 in Minnesota, and yet somehow, mysteriously, they've had to pull him out of the basement and send him to Minnesota. And I'll say this, I'll add something else too. I joked with Tucker the other night that the plan was for Biden to be a kind of ceremonial head of state. He would be the constitutional monarch, was the way I put it, and Kamala would be the prime minister. And at that point, Tucker, somewhat inappropriately, I felt, started doing mocking hand waves of the Queen's particular wave. And we all had a jolly good laugh about it. It seemed to me one analogy. But as I think about it, I don't think Biden is actually up to being a ceremonial constitutional monarch. The Queen works very hard. I can't imagine, let's say, that he were to win, and a couple of weeks later they do the thing like they do with every American president. They book the old state visit to the United Kingdom, and the president has a big dinner where he's sitting next to the Queen at Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle, and he's making conversation with the Queen for 2 hours. I don't think he can do that. He starts his sundowning after about 40 minutes. And usually there's Dr. Jill. Dr. Jill is there. Dr. Jill is there to brush all the people away for him when he starts talking nonsense. He did it yesterday. He was talking some nonsense, and she shoos all the reporters away, and he just talks nonsense and wanders off into the distance. You can't do that when you're sitting next to the Queen. She's 20 years older than him, and she's still got all her marbles. And Dr. Jill will be over on the other side of the table talking to the Duke of Edinburgh or the Prince of Wales, because that's usually how they do it. The Queen and the president sit next to each other and chit-chat, and the first lady is usually with the Duke of Edinburgh, or as he's semi-retired by now, with the Prince of Wales, because the Duke of Edinburgh is 22 years older than Joe Biden and has got more marbles. So he's not even going to be able to stick that. Now, I think there is an element of strong horse, weak horse going on here, as Osama bin Laden used to say. There is no enthusiasm for the Biden ticket. I have never seen fewer signs for a Democrat presidential candidate. And I'm quite a pessimistic guy. I'm in a swing state. New Hampshire's a swing state. And I see more Trump signs than I saw for Trump lost New Hampshire by a couple of thousand votes. And this is why, just to emphasize this, which is the most important thing, your vote counts. Your vote counts because even if you're in a solid blue state like California or New York, so there's no point voting. So you say, oh, there's no point voting because my guy's never going to win. No, but it makes a crucial difference to how they govern as to whether they've got a 46% Republican vote or a 32% Republican vote. If it's even in a blue state, if you vote to remind them that you're a large motivated bloc, you keep them from going too crazy. That's the first reason to do it. If you're in a swing state like me, like mine, where you've got basically 230 towns in New Hampshire. And my kid was saying, oh, you know, this doesn't matter and that doesn't matter. And I was trying to explain to him the reality. If Trump lost by a couple of thousand votes last time. I would think however it goes, it's going to be closer this time. So basically, if you persuade four people who normally can't be bothered in each New Hampshire township to vote, you can actually change the result. That's how it works in a swing state. And I see no enthusiasm. I see people who've got Democrat signs. And again, I've never seen this before, because Democrats are straight ticket guys. I see local Democrats who've got signs for their county commissioner, who've got signs for their executive councillor, who've got signs for their state senator, who've got signs for their congressman, who've got signs for the Senate race, but who don't have signs for Biden-Harris. It's very interesting to me. Then I see other swing states. Arizona, whatever the interstate is down there. A car rally for Trump. We've seen these car rallies. There was one this afternoon. Biden was playing to three internal combustion engines with staffers minding them. So the staffers have gone to Avis and rented three motor cars, compacts, and park them near Joe Biden, and he's playing to them, and then you have this Arizona where the car rally for Trump on whatever the interstate is there stretches back 96 miles, a 96-mile long car rally for Trump. That's a motivated vote. That's a motivated vote. No one except staffers is at a Biden car rally, a Kamala car rally, or an Obama car rally. There's no enthusiasm. Oh, just one final thought. This reason why they don't want him going to from Delaware to Minnesota, never mind what he'll have to do way to win, like going from Delaware to London, suggests to me they're actually worried about what would happen if Joe got this thing. Trump got the thing and shrugged it off. He went mano a mano with COVID-19. He wrestled it into submission and emerged 48 hours later to do his big balcony scene. You know, something is up with the way they're treating Biden. This Douglas Neviera, which I assume is pronounced like Riviera, but if I'm wrong, I apologize, says, Mark, could you please talk about which swing state worries you the most that you believe Trump needs to win on election night? As for my prediction, to the disagreement of most I know, I'm a college student. I believe Trump will win and the red wave will crash into the shores of the Great Lakes this election cycle. Well, my word, if they reach the north shore of those Great Lakes, they'd be washing all over Canada. I believe energy is everything, and that's what Trump has. Yes, that's true. And as we know, Biden is not only opposed to energy, to fracking and to oil and all the rest of it, but he has none himself. Douglas says, Trump will take Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, in addition to the perceived swing states of Georgia and Arizona. The end tally will be 315 to 223. We'll hold you to that, see if you come out on top, because we're giving $100 gift certificates away, according to how close people are on the electoral vote on the Senate side and on the House side. But Mark, will the Stein Club count the extra 100,000 votes that turn up in Pennsylvania on November the 4th? Indeed, there is going to be a significant difference between the score at 10 p.m. on November the 3rd and what it's looking like on November the 4th when those Democrat lawyers get before the district court judges. Anyways, I think Americans recognize that Trump's rhetoric may be distasteful, but it's better than the alternative. The Black Lives Matter riots bolstered this view. Americans do not want their communities turned into Portland or now even Philadelphia. They recognize that should the new Democrat Party take power, they could become the next McCluskey family with the government coming after them for daring to stand up to the mob. I think the Republicans will end up with 54 Senate seats, including a surprise victory for John James. My final prediction is that the left and mainstream media will continue to subvert the Trump presidency. But this time around, Trump will do better because he's been through it before and he does not have someone like Paul Ryan in his ear. How do you feel about my predictions? Well, I think I'm with you on some of these swing states. I think basically he's there, Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio. I'm not sure about Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Certainly, I think Pennsylvania is in the bag, and I think he's there with Arizona and as well on that. I worry about these things. As I said, just to go back to my own state, which is a divided state. It's seen a big influx from Massachusetts and all the rest of it, and there is clearly a genuine 50-50 divide. But last time, what put the Democrats to 50.000001 or whatever it was basically fraudulent votes from college towns. And I'm talking about Dartmouth College and Plymouth State University and the like. And what's interesting to me is that they're now ghost towns, those college towns. The students are gone and nobody knows when they'll be back. So it's not clear to me where they'll be voting, or how they'll be voting, or if they'll be voting, because college politics can be quite a fever pitch for the people who are into it and are all talking, batting it back and forth, and they're all feeding off each other's energy and whatever. And I don't know whether that quite applies if you're just doing online learning. So who knows? Ray Winchester writes, Electoral College, 380 to 158 for Trump, 235 to 380. That would be the biggest in 32 years. Congress, 235 to 200 for the Republicans. Senate, 60-40 to Republicans. Boris to stand down in February 2021. And Rishi Sunak will take over if he hasn't tainted himself too bad with the Wu flu. You know something? I should just explain, just as I said, we're giving away, I think, $400 Stein Online gift certificates. And for the Electoral College, for the Senate side, for the House side, and then one for the most ingenious prediction other than that that happens to come true. And you've got up until midnight tonight to put your prediction on this very comment thread. So below the little thing that you're listening to this on, just now scroll down the page. And if you're a Stein Clubber, just click and make your prediction. You've got until midnight tonight, North American Eastern Time. That's 9 p.m. Pacific Time. And it is 4 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time if you are in the British Isles, and elsewhere on the planet, you have to work it out from there. 4 a.m. I wouldn't presume to figure out what that means if you're in the Chatham Islands or Kiribati. Kiribati, the lovely old Gilbert Islands for us old school imperialists, which, as you know, as all imperialists know, straddles the international dateline and the equator, so it is the land where it is both yesterday and tomorrow, summer and winter simultaneously. I have no idea what that is in Kiribati. But the deadline is midnight North American. Actually, I should be able, if it's the international dateline, it would be about 4 p.m. in the afternoon. Or it'd either be 3 p.m. in the afternoon or 5 p.m. Anyway, if you're in Kiribati, I apologize for getting it wrong. If you're in the Gilbert Islands, if you're in the Ellis Islands, whichever one you fancy of the Gilbert and Ellis Islands, we'd love to hear from you too. Your predictions were as good as anybody else's, but you've got to get them in by midnight North American Eastern Time. That's 4 a.m. And just to go back to what Ray was saying, Boris to stand down in February 2021. Boris has a conservative temperament. Boris thinks he's Churchill. And you can't go around. For years, he's been passing himself off as the Churchill de Donjour, the guy the party's elders have a big problem with. They all revile, but in the end, they turn to them in his hour of need. And when they turned to Churchill in his hour of need, in their hour of need, he pulled off Dunkirk. What's Boris done in the Conservative Party's hour of need? He's now given police powers to bust into Englishmen's homes on Christmas Day to see if they've got too many family members celebrating Christmas. So I think I'm not even going to go to the bonking ban. I mentioned before, Boris, who bonks anything that moves, he's like the most shagadelic shagger in the history of shagging. He shags anything. And he's the PM who brought in a bonking ban, who says if you're in non-cohabiting relations, non-cohabiting couples in tier two or tier three areas cannot have sex. It's not enough that he's taken away your jobs. It's not enough that he's taken away your favourite restaurant. It's not enough that you can't go to the movie to see the new 007 picture. You can't even stay in and shag yourself senseless. For the first time in English history, the beast with two backs, in Shakespeare's memorable phrase, has been prized apart by a so-called Conservative Prime Minister. So you may be right that Boris is gone. Scott Scherzer says, "Dear Mark, for the first time in a long while, I'm feeling confident that President Trump will be re-elected. With the exception of most of the reputable pollsters, all signs point to Trump. He's campaigning like the Tasmanian devil in front of large crowds. Republicans have registered more new voters in the all-important swing states. Early voting doesn't seem to be going the way the Democrats had expected. Joe Biden is going to True Blue, Minnesota for one of his rare forays out of his dungeon. All these things considered, I find it hard to believe that Biden can be up 8 points. Have the polling organizations become just as dishonest as the mainstream media? Or am I seeing this election through rose-coloured glasses?" says Scott Scherzer of Miami Beach. No, you're not, Scott. Not at all. The polls are very... Frank Luntz, you know, the guy who does these focus groups after presidential debates and the like. Frank Luntz says, if the polls are wrong this time, no one will ever believe them again. The problem in America... You know, polling has had certain difficulties, technical, since the move from landlines to cellular technology. That's a big thing that they haven't quite figured, come up with a reliable model to compensate for. From the days when people were quite excited when the telephone would ring around 6:45 in the evening. It was a fixed thing, the telephone. Unless you were near the telephone, you couldn't answer the telephone. And as a result, people didn't make a lot of calls. And so when you were near the telephone, you'd be quite happy to pick it up because you never know. It might be your Auntie Mabel you hadn't heard from in a while. And then the cellular thing changed the way people use the telephone, and that further was distorted with the arrival of smartphones. And then you have further complications, like you tell one side that they don't just have a policy difference with the other side, but they're actually racist and homophobic and evil, in effect. So you're asking a guy that to tell someone he doesn't know on the telephone call he doesn't want to take whether he's evil or not. And then you have things like people proposing a Truth and Reconciliation Commission after the Trump era to deal with all the people who made Trump possible to ensure that it never happens again. A Truth and Reconciliation Commission is what they have in things like post-apartheid South Africa. So now you have to think, oh, it's a bit embarrassing to tell the guy I'm evil, but who's to say he isn't actually going to keep a record of this and then pass it along to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission? And then you have the big problem with American polling in particular, which is that it all depends on the turnout model. And so you have a turnout model in which you have in America a comparatively low voter turnout compared to, say, Belgium or most other Western countries. And so the only way the polls are accurate is if they manage to predict who turns out, the balance of this particular group to that particular group. That's the trick. That's what they have to be good at on top of everything else. And I would argue that just from these unprecedented numbers of early voters, which were not as predicted overwhelmingly Democrat, that's not what it's looking like so far, they have no clue what the turnout model's going to be. They just don't have any idea. Because it's never happened before. They've had 20 years to, well, actually longer than that now. They've had 30 years to figure out what to do about mobile telephones. And they've had 15 years to figure out what to do about smartphones. And they haven't managed to get reliably on top of that. And now they've got COVID and they've got massive early voting. And we're still expected to believe they can come up with a turnout model. And then just to put the cherry on the cake, because that's more difficult. If you've got to get to first predict the turnout model and then predict the election result based off of that turnout model, that's a two-stage process. But even if you're like Australia, where they have compulsory voting, so there's no turnout model because everybody has to turn out, except for a few cranks who, on principle, say, to hell with you guys, I'll pay the fine. But basically everyone turns out. And they still can't predict that. In Australia, it was supposed to be a great victory for the Labour Party, and instead, with the help of Queensland, Scott Morrison somehow survived. So that's the easiest place in the world. When you've got everybody to turn out, you don't need to figure out your turnout model. And yet the polls still couldn't get it right. Ali M says, do the candidates have their own internal polling the public's not privy to? I wonder if we can glean anything from their campaigning during these last few days, where they choose to go, their stump speeches, demeanour, etc. Joe Walking Dead Biden seems to have only one gear, neutral, so it's difficult to decipher any clues. Harris et al. Seem outwardly confident, perhaps secure in the knowledge that the old Democrat machine will come through for them once again, Mayor Daley style. I hope not. Thanks and happy Halloween. Yeah, they do have these internal polls. As I say, a poll that showed, the Washington Post showed Joe Biden 17 points up in Wisconsin. He's got the real numbers and he doesn't believe that. Drew Weber, Mark says, Pelosi said Trump should stand up like a man and accept the results of an election of the American people. Seems this is a higher bar than that for women such as Hillary or herself, who have failed to accept the results of the 2016 election. At least Madam Speaker used the unwoke term man. Indeed. The problems we have. You know, Trump got maybe a third of a first term. because the way the permanent bureaucracy, the deep state, had this ongoing coup against him. And Trump's problems are basically personnel problems. He's hired the wrong people. He won on a platform of draining the swamp, and then he appointed too many swamp dwellers to too many positions. And I sympathize with that problem. There's thousands of people you have to move into these positions, and you've been in the real world. You haven't been in swamp world all your life. Because even reality TV is more real than Washington, D.C. So you don't know anyone. You don't know the kind of people you need to be deputy assistant undersecretary of the Department of Paperwork. But he can't make that mistake the second time around. So he's got to actually get serious. He should find a personnel guy. He's basically been surrounded by people who even thinking about this no-name guy who turned out to be the big anonymous guy working against Trump in the administration. But people who were supposed to be on his side, like John Kelly and John Bolton and that absolutely loathsome twerp, so-called Mad Dog Mattis, he can't go through all that again. He's going to win, and he can't afford to attach lead weights to his coattails like these guys again. Diane M. Calabresi predicts 322 votes for Trump, 216 for Biden. Senate, 55-45 to the GOP. Congress, House of Representatives, 221-214 to the GOP, and says that Trump will win the popular vote and the electoral vote. I would love to see that, Diane, and you're very confident in that. I mean, the Republicans have only won, the Republican presidential candidate has only won the popular vote once in the last 28 years. And that's in part to do with just the huge swollen population in that period, just in California alone, where the state has been utterly transformed by mass immigration. And it has just as like a huge, I mean, don't forget, California has a much bigger population than most Western countries. It's got more people than Canada. It's got more people than Australia. And it's very difficult to outpunch that kind of advantage, Diane. I don't know about that. But if you're right, then we're in landslide country, as we were a century ago with Warren Harding. A huge landslide victory for the Republicans that just swept the Democrats away. And they didn't have polls then. That, again, was all done with gut and instinct and feeling. There wasn't reliable polling then. There wasn't Mr. Gallup. He didn't get going for another generation. So just think like Warren Harding and his GOP did. Just look at what you're seeing with your own eyes. Don't just go to Real Clear Politics and look at Karl Rove's whiteboard every morning and think that's the beginning and end of it. Robert Fox writes, why hasn't Trump hammered the immigration theme in this year's campaign like he did 4 years ago? I would have liked it. I think that was the decisive issue. And I think actually all the issues in the United States derive from that. I believe culture trumps politics and culture trumps economics. So a marginal increase in GDP makes no difference to you if your community has been completely transformed. And that happens all kinds of places. Lewiston, Auburn in Maine, which is now Somali Central. Nobody in Lewiston or Auburn voted for that. It was just done to them. And I would have liked it if he had hammered the immigration theme. I think that's all. I think that's part of the chaos and confusion. The Chamber of Commerce, right? So in other words, the same kind of guys who want to ship all the jobs to China. Nevertheless, for the few jobs that aren't shipped to China, want cheap illegal immigrant labour to do it. And Trump was very good at connecting all that 4 years ago, and he's largely stayed away from that now, and I regret it. I think the people who are advising him... I'll just say this. I've said, I think it was yesterday or earlier today, that I think Trump's going to win. But Trump's going to win despite his campaign, not because of it. This thing he does, these rallies he does those because they make him feel good. He enjoys them. It's not something that campaign consultants and the rest... It's a form he invented 4 years ago, so it's really nothing to do with the campaign. The official campaign, run by Brad Parshall, whatever he's called, they blew through $1 billion and had nothing to show for it. Absolutely nothing to show for it. And if Trump wins on Tuesday, it will be despite the campaign, not because of it. Holly says, Mark, you have said that China's in control of the world, but I wonder if that's about to change. Multiple natural disasters, flooding, earthquakes, hail, locusts, resulting in food shortages on top of the toll from the virus on their own people, their inability to exploit technology after they've stolen it, SMIC, Huawei, which will soon affect their military, pushback from Australia, India and the US, among others. Being the optimist you are, do you think China's global ambitions are failing? Long-term, China is a problematic power. As you know, 14 years ago, I said... China will get old before it gets rich because of its distorted demographics and its insane one-child policy. And that line of mine, China will get old before it gets rich, sort of spread around a bit. It went viral, as we didn't say 14 years ago, to the point where I was watching Henry Kissinger being interviewed, and dear old Henry at some point... actually quoted that line. It sounds much more impressive, has much more gravitas in his accent than it does in mine. China will get old before it gets rich. And I still think that's true. But China is filling a void here. The West is turned in on itself and talking about pointless garbage all day long, all week long. You know, we could have had an election about something serious. We could have had an election about China. I mentioned Warren Harding a century ago. Warren Harding, the Harding election, was about the League of Nations. Which, as you know, Woodrow Wilson was greatly in favor of. And the election was basically as total a repudiation of Wilson's foreign policy as you could imagine. You can have serious elections. And we could have had a serious election about China, but instead it devolved largely into trivial things. And I regret that. It would have been nice to have a serious election. Benjamin Baumgartner writes, Hey, Mark, I think by Tuesday night the Democrats and their minions will be in full riot mood before the evening's over. Oh, I should actually just wrap up with what Holly was saying. Yeah, I don't think China's global ambitions are failing. They own everyone, including Joe Biden. So they think that what's happened the Trump trade war and everything is an aberration. They can go back to owning everyone and getting their way. Africa is becoming one big Chinese protectorate. So is much of Asia. So are large parts of European infrastructure. We've seen some pushback in Australia, no pushback in Canada. No pushback in the Caribbean, where China also deep have their fingers in every conceivable pie. So I think they figure they're basically on the same side as the Hollywood celebrities and Joe Biden and the American media. Trump's an aberration. We get rid of Trump. We undo Trump things go back to normal. And what they mean by normal is it's China's world and Joe and Kamala and the rest just live in it. That's what China means, Holly. Benjamin Baumgartner. I think by Tuesday night, the Democrats and their minions will be in full riot mood before the evening is over. Yes, yes, yes. Not counting Portland and Seattle, which are in a perpetual state of riot. The pot is boiling and the lid will soon blow. Do you think we will see the kind of riots like the late 60s with wide-scale destruction and violence? And when do you think the average voter who doesn't riot will finally step up to face the enemy, which most definitely mean the Chinese also? I don't know. I think you're right that there's going to be violence on after the election. The question is whether it's violence starting at 9:47 on election night itself, as they realize they've lost. And so their thing is to create such chaos that appeasing the losers of the election becomes more important than actually who won it. On the other hand, if they do actually win it, I think they're going to get serious about cracking down on basic rights such as freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of religion. And these guys on the streets are going to be their enforcers. I don't know whether I'm Mr. Average, but I will just say this. I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment, but I'm not someone who, you know, I'm like an effete Nancy boy foreigner, so I'm not someone who's like going around doing a lot of shooting, doing a lot of hunting. It's been some years since I hunted, mainly because I'm always got other pressures on my time and things. But when I returned to the United States a couple of months ago, whatever it was now, I was a bit shocked that I couldn't get anyone to meet me at a big metropolitan airport because none of my various minions wanted to go to the big city and meet me because there were all these stories about big Antifa, Black Lives Matter demos blocking the bridges and blocking the interstates in and out of town and all the rest of it. And funnily enough, so since then, I haven't actually really gone to any big cities anywhere. I'm tootle around northern New Hampshire. I haven't even gone as far south as Manchester, never mind Nashua. For one reason or another, I have to go to Chittenden County in Vermont, and I haven't been to downtown Burlington because they've had this big BLM infestation. No black people, of course, in the Vermont BLM movement. They've had all these people at the Battery, whatever it's called, Battery Park in Burlington that were menacing people around town. As I said, I'm not a big gun guy. I believe in the Second Amendment, but I'm not usually someone who travels around northern New Hampshire and northern Vermont packing heat. But just because of like little anecdotes, people have said that, you know, their car got caught in something and whatever. I now have the old, well, actually not the old. couldn't find the old, so I treated myself to a new Ruger. And I've got it in the glove box. I've never done that in all the years I've lived around here. But there's too many incidents. You just see where too many incidents. Like the McCluskeys. The McCluskeys aren't gun people until, you know, the people who wanted to kill and smash and burn turned up on their front lawn. So now when I tootle around, I tend to be prepared, as they say. And I regret that. But it's also the strange world we live in today. Sergey writes, let's wrap it up with this. I don't have a question. I'd just like you to say Kamala a few times in a very racist way. Kamala, 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 Kamala. That was the big wrestler. Kamala, the Ugandan giant. Kamala, all her friends, she was at high school in Montreal, all her friends called her Kamala. She's this season's British subject. She's half Indian, half Jamaican, educated in Montreal, where everyone called her Kamala. And she's pretending to be something to do with the black experience in America. I don't know why black Americans put up with that. First, they had Obama, the British subject from Kenya. Now they have a British subject from Jamaica and India via high school in Montreal. Why do... Talk about... Never mind your white privilege. What about your British subject privilege? Why aren't black Americans... Well, they are, apparently. 30% are going to vote for Trump or something. If 30% of blacks are voting for Trump, it's all over. We're in landslide country. That's it. I've gone way over the limit. Don't forget, in a couple of hours, part two of The Vampire, if you want a break from politics. It's not as horrible as American presidential politics. I should warn you that, but it's our Halloween tale. Sunday I will be with Tucker, Monday morning with Fox and Friends, and we will do it right here with another Clubland Q&A very soon.